5 o'clock hour, Burns and Gambo show live from the Akjin Community Studios. To all of our female listeners out there, I apologize. I was thinking of my house when I was talking about women who don't talk sports.
In
my house, the women do not talk sports.
Yeah.
Are you getting blown up on Twitter?
No, I wouldn't say blown up. I've got a couple of jabs, and I deserved it, and I apologize. I deserved it.
Women talk sports?
We have women who listen to this show, and we love them and respect them, and they're just as big of sports fans as I am. They're probably more knowledgeable than I am about this stuff. When I was going on that little tangent, I was specifically thinking about
your wife,
sports conversations that I've had in my house, and it doesn't really resonate a whole lot. So
yeah,
I'm
a diva.
on behalf of all women, apology accepted.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Sarah, because I do owe. Yes, women and apology.
I was the one sticking up for the women.
Yeah, that was a weird, freaky Friday moment on the Burns and Gambo show, wasn't it? It was like we switched bodies there for a second.
I leave the booth for 20 seconds.
I know, right? You walk out, and all of a sudden, Gambo's sounding like me, and I'm sounding like Gambo, and the whole world just came to an end. So,
wrong with women talking about who the Cardinals should take with the first pick?
Nothing at all. It's just not my house.
Cooler?
I was thinking specifically of conversations in my house, and it's more in line with The Bachelor and The Real Housewives of Orange County. Or
get off the gas, yo. You did it to yourself.
Oh, that's the most perfect drop of all time, Jordan.
It really is. It really is. Yeah, absolutely. So welcome back into the Burns and Gambo show here on 98.7 FM. You missed one, Jordan, when you were gone. We had the Antonio Brown one yesterday. When Patrick Peterson was responding to Antonio Brown on Twitter, hit my line?
Yo AB, yo, hit my line.
Yo at AB 84, hit my line.
Call you me. Tripping, yo.
Exactly.
It's so funny. Okay, so Josh Rosen, Kyler Murray, the rumors, the speculation.
Yep.
Scott Bordeaux in The Athletic today. There's going to be a million different ways to think about this story moving forward. He suggested something today that I had not thought of yet. And we still have 2 months before we know how this is all going to turn out.
Okay.
The problem with trading Rosen and drafting Murray, Gesundheit, is that you just went through the quarterback getting the first year out of the way. Do you really want to do that again?
If he's a franchise-altering quarterback. I mean, this is very simple. I mean, I think everybody reads too much into it. If the Arizona Cardinals determine that Kyler Murray is a surefire franchise quarterback, like there's no doubt about it, and they have doubts about Josh Rosen, well, then you could do that. But you have to have both. If you don't have doubts about Rosen, if you still believe internally that Rosen's going to be a great quarterback, you're not going to do anything. Two things have to happen. You have to believe that Kyler Murray is a franchise-altering quarterback and a surefire franchise-altering quarterback. That's one. And two, you have to have doubts about Rosen. If those two things happen, then you could take Kyler Murray number one overall. But if you are not sure that, if you like Kyler Murray, hey, I like him a lot. You think he's a franchise quarterback? I'm not sure. I'm concerned about his weight. I'm not sure. I'm concerned about his height. Then you can't do it. You can't do it because you have Rosen. So you would have to absolutely love Murray and have doubts about Rosen. And I don't know if they have doubts about Rosen, because if they still feel internally like, hey, Rosen struggled because we didn't have good wide receivers. Our offensive line was banged up all year. We had an awful offensive coordinator that got fired 3 games into the season.
Right.
Our coach, like all of those are factors as to why, if you believe that's why Rosen didn't have a good season, well, then you still believe that Rosen will be good for you.
I understand exactly what you're saying. I just, from that perspective, part of the benefit of Josh Rosen to me is that you got that rookie year out of the way. It's done. It's over. Most rookie years for quarterbacks are painful. Most rookie years are hard. We were talking about this earlier.
Sure.
And you said, well, they're doing it with the coach. And I said, well, back-to-back first-time head coaches, I would think back-to-back first-time NFL quarterbacks would be even harder. I think it's harder to be a first-year NFL quarterback than it is a first-year NFL coach. I think it's a lot harder.
Well, probably.
To be a first year. I mean, that's a rough.
Deer in the headlights. You're trying to understand a new offense. The NFL, it's a longer season. Everybody's bigger, faster, stronger. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to take in.
And part of the benefit to Rosen is he's got that behind him now. That's done. That's over. Whereas Murray, I virtually guarantee you, maybe I won't totally guarantee you, I virtually guarantee you that wherever he goes, whoever picks him in the draft, he is going to struggle in year one, because rookie quarterbacks in this league struggle in year one. Personally, I can't wait to see the leap Josh Rosen's going to take in year two, especially with a guy like Cliff Kingsbury as his coach. I can't wait to see what he's capable of now that his first year is behind him and now that he's got a coach who's a little more centric to what Rosen's trying to do out there, as opposed to last year.
Listen, there's this misconception that Kingsbury loves Murray and that Murray'd be the perfect fit in this offense. Kingsbury can coach a whole bunch of different quarterbacks, okay? Now, again, the thing that scares me about Murray is, I mean, even Drew Brees at times will tell, he's got to step up on his toes to see over the line. He's got to crank his head up a little bit to see. The game is still, you still have to throw the ball through windows. So you still have to throw it through windows. Now, Murray's ability to slide around and find those windows is there. But it's still, like I said yesterday, it's a timed game. There's only so much time you have. So for a bigger quarterback, the windows, if they're not there, you still have the ability to throw the ball over the top. Most throws in the NFL are still through windows, but a 6'3 quarterback can go, you know, wait on the offensive lineman to get the defensive lineman's hands down and throw the football. Kyler Murray's going to have to find windows throughout. He's going to have to find the windows because he's not always going to be able to see. A lot of times he's not going to be able to see.
Yeah.
So there are doubts about him. The agent came out and said he weighed 205 today. We'll see if he weighs 205. I don't know if he's wearing, if he's got two dumbbells in his hand when he's weighing. I don't 205.
I was going to say, I saw that. Yeah, here's his agent. Quote, agent Eric Burkhart. This is from ProFootballTalk.com. Eric Burkhart recently said on a Barstool podcast that Murray weighs 205. This is Mike Florio on Pro Football Talk. I know muscle weighs more than flab, but I sat 2 feet from Murray 12 days ago in Atlanta, and I'm bigger than Kyler Murray, and I weigh 185 pounds.
Wow. Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, listen, he can add some weight with muscle for sure to get ready, but if he comes in weighing 175 or 185 pounds, I'm not worried about the height, because to me, I don't know that there's a difference between 5'9", 5'9 and a quarter, 5'9 and a half, or 5'10. You're small. Like, you're too small.
Yeah.
At 5'9 or 5'10, you're too small. My question is, do you have any bulk to you?
Can you take a hit?
Can you take a hit?
Yep.
And you can't be 185 pounds and take too many hits in the NFL.
Join Kevin McCabe and AZ Preps live Saturday, 9 to 11 a.m. at the Chick-fil-A off of the 202 in Santan Village Parkway in Gilbert. You're going to have the chance to win free Chick-fil-A for a year, plus Suns, Coyotes, and Innings Festival tickets. Visit the events page at arizonasports.com for details on the Chick-fil-A High School Basketball Roadshow Series. One NFL team drafting in the top 10 has already found their quarterback. So do we take the black Sharpie and draw a line through the Denver Broncos in terms of teams that could move up with the Cardinals? We'll talk about that coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show.
You must learn.
It's the Knowledge Drop.
Let knowledge drop.
The Knowledge Drop. Brought to you by Lifetime Windows. Did you know metal window frames conduct heat right into your home? Visit LifetimeWindowsAZ.com.
We learned apparently that John Elway likes himself some Super Bowl MVP quarterbacks, albeit recycled ones, because for the last two times, a Super Bowl MVP quarterback has moved on from his team. Both times they've landed in Denver. Peyton Manning was one. Now Joe Flacco is number two. Traded today.
Paxton Lynch, that didn't work out. Signed Case Keenum, that didn't work out. He's having a hard time finding a quarterback.
You know
there.
What? And that's okay. We can sit here and debate about, you like Joe Flacco. I really don't.
I do like him. You know what I like about him, honestly?
Then what?
My guy's adorable. He plays every game every year.
Except for this last year.
But 9 out of the 10 years he's been in the NFL, he's played all 16 games.
Well, unless this is like the start of maybe the end of that dirt.
He's super durable.
He's
got a high completion percentage. I like him as a quarterback.
I think he's kind of a dink and dunk guy. I don't think he's had a lot of individual or team success the last few years. Since they made the Super Bowl, his numbers have been pretty pedestrian. I mean, the completion percentage is there. Way too many interceptions. Not throwing the ball down the field. I'm just not much of a fan, but you are. We'll agree to disagree on that. Flacco goes to Denver today. Deal can't be official until the start of the new league year, which is March 13th. It's going to be for a fourth-round pick, according to reports. The Broncos already have two of them because they picked up an extra one in the Demaryius Thomas trade with the Texans. My first thought when I saw the story was, okay, do we take out a pen and draw a line through the Denver Broncos as a potential trade partner for the Cardinals as a team looking to move up and get a quarterback?
Probably. I mean, I would say probably.
I think that kind of eliminates them, doesn't it?
I think so. They just added a quarterback who's got 3 years left on his contract. He's 34 years old. And, I mean, you could. He doesn't have any guaranteed money on his contract. So you could literally go year by year. If it doesn't work out, he doesn't work out. But I mean, if you're going to go pay the guy $18, $19 million, you know, he's your starting quarterback. So if you draft somebody, he's not going to play behind Flacco. You know, you just traded for Flacco. He's playing. I doubt it. I doubt that they would move up to get a quarterback. They could take one in the second round. You know, it's possible that they could say, okay, let's find a replacement because Flacco might only be here for a year or two and then try to develop a guy. See what happens. But I would think that takes them out of moving up to number one.
Yeah. Jeff Darlington from the NFL Network and NFL.com talking about Joe Flacco going to Denver.
I've talked to people in Baltimore who said that he was over it. He wasn't into it. He was not going the extra mile. He wasn't meeting with receivers after practice. He wasn't doing anything that would suggest that this is a guy who still wants the Super Bowl run in him.
Wow.
Jeez. Wow. You wonder if part of that is the Lamar Jackson.
Sure.
You know, drafting a kid and, you know, committing to Lamar Jackson and just knowing that that's it. This is it for me. My run in Baltimore with the Ravens is over.
Well, if anybody didn't know this was coming, all you had to do was watch that playoff game with the Ravens when Lamar Jackson was just awful out there and John Harbaugh refused.
Would not put him in.
Refused to put Joe Flacco in. And
it was fascinating because, you know, that game, they were absolutely so bad. They were pathetic throughout the entire game. I mean, Lamar Jackson got sacked 7 times, all with 4 or fewer rushers. I mean, they played 7 defensive backs the whole game. He couldn't figure it out at all, and they didn't go to Flacco. They stayed with Lamar Jackson while he was getting pounded on a regular basis and being sacked 7 times in a game. It's crazy.
Yeah. And I remember coming in here with you the day after that Monday after that game. That's the surest sign that you know that Joe Flacco is gone, baby.
That they wouldn't put
gone.
Him in.
They
and that ended up
in.
Being a close game. I mean, that ended up being only like a 6-point game.
It did. And I remember that, you know, the Baltimore fans were booing Lamar Jackson. The Baltimore players were telling Baltimore fans, hey, the only reason we're here is because of this kid. Why are you booing him
Flacco
like that?
Flacco was 4-5 when he went out with the hip injury.
Yeah, they didn't.
And Jackson got him to the playoffs.
They didn't want to destroy Jackson's confidence by taking him out because they knew at that moment that Jackson was the future. As far as Broncos are concerned, this is Damian Woody. And he kind of wanted the same things we were talking about a second ago. Just how many chances is John Elway going to get when it comes to finding the quarterback?
It seems like he's been throwing a lot of darts at the quarterback position, you know, between, you know, drafting Paxton Lynch in the first round, Trevor Siemian, you know, Case Keenum, now Joe Flacco. I mean, how many more opportunities are you going to get to try to rectify that position if you're John Elway?
In fact, Schefter today on ESPN was talking about the future of Keenum in Denver.
I think his future now is up in the air. I think that's the best way of saying it. We don't know whether the Broncos will keep him, rework his contract, try to trade him. I think a lot will depend on who has interest, if anybody else is interested, what they decide to do, how much money they need to save. Again, I think there are no answers right now as to Case Keenum's future. The one thing that we can say is that it's up in the air, it's uncertain, and I don't think the Broncos know at this point in time what they'll wind up doing with Case Keenum, but Joe Flacco is the new expected starting quarterback for the Denver Broncos.
It is easy to figure out. He's not in their plans anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to get rid of him. I mean, Case Keenum's not in their plans. If there's a team looking for a backup quarterback, you know, that somebody might be able to offer a late draft pick for Keenum. If he restructures his contract, you know, and that's basically it. I mean, the Broncos also have Kevin Hogan. He's on the roster. So there's, I mean, there's no way that they, I mean, I can't see a way that they would keep Keenum, not with the money they got to play, amount of money they got to pay.
It triggered a memory. Somebody tagged you and I on a tweet earlier from Benjamin Albright, who is a verified Twitter account. He's based out of Denver, NFL draft quarterbacks, radio and TV guy, according to his bio. He tweeted out right when this all went down. And I just remembered this a second ago. Keep an eye on Arizona as a potential Case Keenum trade. Because remember,
King, well, they have a quarterback.
I know Kingsbury had him with, what, Houston, right? Wasn't he the offensive coordinator?
At Houston?
At Houston. He had a year, and Case Keenum put up ridiculous numbers under Cliff Kingsbury when Kingsbury was at Houston, I think.
There's no way.
I don't think there is either.
There's no way.
Because they've financed, that was the whole point with Glennon, was to be able to financially have your backup locked in. I can't imagine there's any way that would be, but given that there is, it's so, boy, isn't it funny how people like to connect the dots between Kingsbury and quarterbacks that he's had history, even when he's had a distant history with them, like Kyler Murray. People are just in such a rush to say, well, there's a history there. There's a this, there's a that.
So because of the connection to Kingsbury, they think that you would have to trade for him. Can you see the Cardinals giving up a draft pick for Case Keenum?
Nope.
It'd be a late draft pick.
Sure.
But would you even give up a sixth-round pick for him?
When I'm already kind of set on the backup quarterback. I got a guy. And he's making good backup quarterback money. The salary's right. The number fits with what I'm doing. I don't want to add to that at all.
There is no chance.
Yeah.
Zero. Zero chance that they would trade for Case Keenum.
But again, it just goes to highlight the Kingsbury connection and how people are so eager, maybe over eager, to connect those dots. That if there's any history at all, any history whatsoever, they're going to link him to Cliff Kingsbury.
Yes. It's not going to happen. You don't have to worry about Case Keenum coming here, I promise you.
Good.
Case
I can Keenum's, sleep tonight.
Case Keenum's not coming to the Arizona Cardinals. I'm not giving up a draft pick for Case Keenum.
I wasn't going to be able to sleep until I knew that. Now,
you can sleep.
I can sleep.
That's what it's all about.
The Suns currently have plenty of wing players. If they were going to use that depth for a trade, who stays? Who goes?
Should I stay or should I go now?
That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show. John Gambadoro, Dave Burns, the Burns and Gambo Show, live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios. James Jones earlier today on the Burns and Gambo Show. Yes, the comments that he has made on this radio station the last couple of days, both with Doug and Wolf on Newsmakers Week and then during the Suns' midseason special a couple of nights ago, about wanting to add veteran players, wanting to add 4 to 5 veteran players, means the strategy for building the roster has indeed changed.
Yeah, it has. I will say that. You know, we talk about adding veterans, not in the sense of, you know, adding veterans similar to the ones we've had in the past, and that's no slight against the guys we had, but I think the gap was just too broad. So we're thinking about guys between 25 and 30, you know, veterans, guys that can compete and earn an opportunity to play here. And if you do that, you create enough pressure so these guys have to grow rather than, you know, waiting for their timeline or waiting for, you know, for their career arc to kind of shape the direction of the franchise.
But you and I, using the comments that he had made a couple days ago, we sort of assumed that meant that wing players might be expendable in some sort of a trade in order to facilitate these veteran players that you'd want to bring in to kind of move things up a little bit. He says not so. They think they can keep all 4 wings.
No, I don't think you have to move them out. I think our guys have enough versatility to be able to grow and play different roles. But the targeting of multiple, you know, 5 guys, you know, if you target 5, maybe you get 3. But we want to target guys that can actually come in and play. And some of those guys will come in and compete and not play, but they'll just collectively increase the competition here. They'll increase the capacity to play games and win games. And more importantly, they'll give us options that we can use in close games. You know, we'll have experience across the board. So that's where our focus is. But I think we can keep all of our guys. Our goal and our challenge will be trying to keep all of them because, you know, guys like Kelly, he's a free agent. But we're going to do our best to try to keep this core group together.
Have about $81 million committed to next year, not counting, you know, Kelly. And the projection is about $109 million of what the salary cap will be. Gives you about $30 million. How many veterans can you get for $30 million? Can you get three veterans at, you know, $10 million each? Probably. Could probably add like three veterans on that list. But if Kelly gets like 15, well, now you only got $15 million left. And
right.
You know, now you're talking about a $5 million player. I do know that they are looking for guys on multi-year deals, not one-year deals. So one-year deals are, you know, because one-year deal, if things go bad, you got to trade that guy by December. Or, you know, it just doesn't go right, and a guy knows he's not going to be a part of the future. Two-year deals, like, I'm here for a little bit. I can unpack. I could go rent myself a place. I'm going to be here for a couple of years. I don't have to worry that I'm going to get traded in December because I'm an expiring contract like Trevor Ariza was. So they are going to look to sign guys to multi-year deals, not one-year deals.
The other day when he was on Newsmakers Week with Doug and Wolf, talking about James Jones now, and then when he was on the Suns midseason special, on both occasions, he talked about not wanting to have to rely on young players, extremely young players, to win basketball games. He spoke of, like he kind of referenced there a second ago, four or five players who would come in and, you know, ages 25 to 30 and just make the Suns older and more veteran and things like that. Now, when you and I, we talked a lot about James's comments yesterday. You and I both presumed that meant that he was going to be looking to trade some of his wings. That would be the best way for him to do that.
Because initially we're thinking, okay, you're going to have five players. You got Booker and Ayton. Now that's seven. If you keep all four of your wings, that's 11. You're not going to have an 11-man rotation. You're not going to bring in five veterans. I'm going to bring you in a veteran free agent. I'm going to sign him a multi-year deal. You're not going to play. You're not going to have 11. You're not going to go 11 deep. You'll go nine deep. You'll play five with four backups. Maybe you'll go to 10 when you have to, but most of the time you'll play a nine-man rotation. So if you got Booker and Ayton and you've got the other four wings, well, that's six. Adding three guys makes sense. Adding three would make sense. That gets you to nine. But that also means taking out we could easily eliminate guys. Melton or Okobo, which one do you like? Eliminate the one you don't like. You could eliminate the one you don't like.
No doubt.
Okay. Dragan Bender, Troy Daniels, Jamal Crawford. There's four guys right there. Jamal Crawford, Dragan Bender, Troy Daniels, and one of the two point guards. That's four guys that I could eliminate from the roster.
But even then, the guys that you've eliminated, those are roster spots you're talking about. That's not minutes.
No.
I mean, those are just spots on the roster.
Right, right.
If you're talking about minutes, now you're talking about who doesn't play because you signed the veteran, who doesn't play, you know, who becomes the next Dragan Bender, who becomes the next Troy Daniels, who just sits on the bench. It sounds like such a vague plan. I don't know how they're going to pull it off. I can't wait to see him try.
They're changing plans. So the plan now is I need players between the ages of 25 and 30 to help the young kids. But it's all about Booker and Ayton, as you could tell. He mentioned Booker and Ayton. Nobody else. There is nobody. So not Josh Jackson, not TJ Warren, not Kelly Oubre, not Mikal Bridges. I like Mikal. You like Mikal. He fits in great. And he's cheap because of where he was drafted and everything. So I think they're in a pretty good spot with adding the veterans if they move out some of the wings. But I don't see a scenario which you could add three or four veterans and keep all four wings.
I don't either. And that's why James Jones has been on this radio station three times in the last 3 days now, and I'm still kind of confused as to, I understand the basics of the plan, but the way he described it a couple days ago sounded like it was predicated on we're too young.
Yes.
We're just too young.
So that was the old plan. The old plan was to get young and let the guys grow together over a period of 5 years.
But it sounds like he's trying to get older while still staying young. I don't think you're going to be able to do that. I think you're going to kind of have to choose a path. And if you want to get older, that's fine. But the best way for you to get there is to sacrifice some of your youth, because those guys will have a market. Josh Jackson will have a market. TJ Warren on that contract will have a market. You'll be able to trade those guys. But to think that you're going to keep them all.
There's no way all four wings come back to start the season next year.
And then
there's
find
no
three free agents that are good enough to be worth the kind of money that you're going to need to pay them to help improve the product next year. I don't see how you can do both. I think you're kind of dreaming if you think you can do both.
Based on what the new plan is. Remember, the old plan was we're going to get a bunch of young players, we're going to get a bunch of lottery picks, and we're going to grow these guys together for 5 years. And by the time they're all 24, 25, 26, 27, we're going to have a winning team. Because everybody else is going to be old. Well, that plan is being changed to be like, okay, We're going to build around two of our young players, and we're going to add a bunch of not veterans out of 30 to 35, but veterans out of 25 to 30 who have plenty of experience that can help these guys win now.
Okay, so...
So that plays in line to the thinking that they need to get Booker help.
Yeah. So if they're going to do... Let's say they decide, you know what, and maybe part of this theory, too, could be that James just didn't want to talk on the radio about getting rid of wings because now suddenly before you
you don't want to put that
you're in a Lakers type position, right? In a position where guys are looking around. Are you going to be here next year? I don't know. Are you going to be here next year? I don't know. Who's, you know, you don't. So perhaps part of the reason why he wanted to talk about not trading any wings because he didn't want to make anybody feel expendable. If you and I both agree that a wing or two has to go in all of this in order to accommodate these veteran players, who we both agree Mikal should be one of the ones who stays. And I think he's pretty close to untouchable. He should be pretty close to untouchable. Who else? Who else should stay? You like Oubre.
I like Oubre. I would keep Mikal and Oubre because those guys don't need to score 20 points. TJ doesn't do anything but score. He's a great scorer. So if Yadam is your sixth guy just to score, I love it. But he doesn't do anything. He's not a playmaker. He's not a passer. He's a scorer. Mikal and Oubre are tough and they're defensive-minded, and they don't need to score a lot of points to be happy. With Josh just doesn't seem to be happy unless he's getting his 15, you know, shots a game. He just doesn't, and he is a playmaker, and he can be a playmaker, but he just doesn't seem to be happy unless he's being one of the top scorers out there.
I would agree with that. The only reason I didn't pick Oubre and I picked Josh as my second wing that I want to keep is if truly is the goal is to go out and spend some money, right, and to bring in veteran players to help Booker and Ayton as your core, and you're going to keep a couple of wings, I want to have as much money as possible. Oubre is going to be expensive. He's going to be expensive to keep. And TJ's not expensive, but he's on a decent chunk of change for his contract. I'm going to pick those two because that maxes my ability to go shopping for veterans, maximizes my ability to spend money in the offseason. So for me, I'm keeping Bridges, I'm keeping Josh Jackson, and the other two are expendable if I'm going to go out and go shopping.
Yeah.
And that's how I look at it.
And it might be one. It might be where they feel like, okay, we just need to eliminate one. Well, the one with the highest salary is TJ. But it may be Oubre if he gets somewhere between $10 and $15 million a year. The cheapest one is Mikal. So it may depend on salary as to which ones they keep, too, because the bigger salary right now is TJ. But if you don't bring back Oubre, you might save yourself $10 to $15 million a year.
Have you subscribed to the Burns and Gambo podcast? You can. We'll digitally deliver it to you every single day. Our show right there on your phone. You can listen to it whenever you want. Subscribe on your iPhone, your Android. You'll never miss any of the show. The Burns and Gambo podcast is brought to you this week by your Valley Chevy dealer. It sounded like the job was Ketel Marte's to lose, but now the Diamondbacks might have something else in mind for center field this season. We'll talk about that coming up on the Burns and Gambo show. Apparently there's a run on the Kansas City Royals signing mediocre former Diamondback relievers.
Oh God, who'd they sign now?
Jake Diekman. The Royals announced on Wednesday the club signed lefty reliever Jake Diekman to a one-year contract that includes a mutual option for 2020.
Did they pay him money?
Well, that's usually part of a contractual agreement, is it oftentimes.
Did he pitch for free? Does he pitch for free?
Money exchanges hands.
That's what it should be. Like, if you're really bad, like, I'll pitch for free. Get him out of here! I'll pitch for free. I just want the service time and to add to my pension down the road and stuff like that. You don't actually have to pay me any money.
Brad Boxberger, of
course,
meal
plan, maybe,
signed by the Kansas City Royals a few days ago, and Diekman will now slot into the back of the Royals bullpen along with a couple of other guys as well. So there you go. In case you're curious where former Diamondback relievers who helped contribute to an awful September in 2018 went, there's the answer to that particular Jeopardy trivia contest right there. They're in Kansas City.
Yeah.
Good luck, boys.
Could do that. Go through all the former. Where's Daniel Descalso? Where's Jake Diekman? Where's Jeff Mathis?
Texas?
Mm-hmm.
Chicago? And
Kansas City.
Yeah. Boxberger in Kansas City. Yeah.
I mean, those are the hard ones. Where's Paul Goldschmidt, Patrick Corbin, and AJ Pollock?
Those are the easy ones.
Those ones, yeah. Those ones hurt more.
Those aren't the daily double. Yeah. No one's going to make those the daily double at all. The Diamondbacks pitcher and catcher's first workout today. We'll be out at Salt River Fields doing our show live out there, I think in like a week and a half, if I remember. I know it's here. It's here. It's time. It's time to go. It's baseball time.
It's go time.
Yeah, it's go time. Unless you're Bryce Harper or Manny Machado, then it's just go to the kitchen and get another beer time because you don't have anything better to do right now. The Diamondbacks, once again, Torrey Lovello, he was a guest on Doug and Wolf's show on Monday as part of Newsmakers Week. And you and I both noted listening to the interview, he was kind of vague about Ketel Marte in center field. It wasn't a firm commitment. It was very, very fluid, I think was the words he used. He was that vague again today.
I don't know that answer. We feel like that he's capable of going out there and taking on that challenge. I know that we would be asking a lot of him, but we've done a lot of work and we've done a lot of preparation as far as conversation and just making sure that he understands the reason for us considering this.
Boy, that's a whole lot of uncertainty, given that seemed to be what the plan was for the last month and a half when they knew AJ Pollock was going to leave, and it's led you to believe that perhaps there's a plan B here.
I do think the plan B is Adam Jones. I really do. If he's willing to take a one-year deal, the Diamondbacks would never sign him to a multi-year deal. They could give him a team option on a second year, but that would be up to them. But a one-year deal would make sense if Adam Jones is not able to find any multi-year contracts anywhere else. Now, there's a lot of free agents still out there, and maybe some will sign at the last minute when they realize there's no market for them, and they'll just have to take whatever deals are out there. But I do believe that Adam Jones is a real possibility for the Diamondbacks to play center field. He's 34 years old. He's coming off a year which he hit 15 homers. He hit like 280. He got moved to right field because they had a much younger and faster player in Cedric, I think it was Simmons, that they wanted to play center, so they moved him to right. He's still capable of playing center. He's not a great center fielder like he used to be because he's been in the league for 13 years. But could he play center field for 1 year for the Diamondbacks? Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, defensively, most of the metrics will tell you he's a liability out there. Defensively, most of the metrics will say that he's not... That he's just not as good, and I think that goes without saying, given that he's 33 years old, but that he is a bit of a liability out there defensively. I keep looking at it as, okay, as bad as he might be out there, and last year the numbers would say he was pretty bad, are you better off going that direction and keeping Ketel Marte at a position where you know he excels defensively at second base? Or are you better off moving Marte to center field where you have no idea if he can handle the position or not, and putting Wilmer Flores at second base, who we know the metrics tell you is not a very good defensive second baseman at all?
Well, that's why Adam Jones is a real possibility. I'm telling you, if Adam Jones would take a one-year deal, the Diamondbacks would sign him. Now, he may play this out a little bit and try to find a multi-year deal or try to find a one-year deal for more money. But he is in play for the Diamondbacks. Adam Jones is in play for the Diamondbacks as a potential, but it would have to be a one-year deal. It has to be a one-year deal. And if he's willing to accept that, they could bring him in here. Now, are you going to get 162 games out of him in center field? No, probably not. You know, could you get 120? Sure. Could you get Adam Jones to play center field for 120 games? I think you could.
Yeah.
You still got Jared Dyson, who's a center fielder. You might look at Adam Jones and get 100 games out of him.
Gerard Dyson's health, that's going to be really risky to count on, I think, given how much time he missed last year.
You could put Marte over
there. You put Brito out there.
Marte over there at times.
Sure.
You're not getting 140 games out of Adam Jones in center. You're getting somewhere between 100 and 120 if you sign him.
It just seems to me that whatever you think about Adam Jones defensively as a center fielder, and I understand there's a lot of people out there who don't think much of him defensively. It seems to me that when you count your catcher, shortstop, second base, and center fielder, right? If you move Marte out to center and you have Wilmer Flores at second, you are weak or questionable or unsure of three of those four spots. If you put Adam Jones in center field and leave Ketel Marte at second base, now it's just two out of the four. And
that's why they're willing to do it.
And at the end of the day, that seems to me to be kind of the driving force behind this.
Yeah. 1 year deal, maybe a team option. But if he finds another deal somewhere else, you know, then he may take it. I think there's a better than good chance that they end up with him.
Archie Bradley today laying down the gauntlet about his fingernail and his curveball.
Boy, this nail is solid. Throwing some hammers this year.
Really?
Yeah. I'm going to have one of the best curveballs in the big leagues this year.
Again?
Yeah. It's nasty. It is. Nail's healthy, no crack, been able to throw it all off season. And, I mean, you can hear in the tone of my voice, I'm really excited to get out there and throw some good curveballs this year.
Way to manage those expectations, Archie.
He's going to have one of the best curveballs in all of baseball.
Set that bar nice and low, Archie.
I don't have a problem with that at all.
I don't either. I love it. I think it's fun.
Talk the talk. You just got to walk the walk,
you
right?
You just got to back it.
You got to back
it
up.
You got to do it. All right. I mean, that's some big bold talk. That's the kind of stuff that people, oh, okay. Archie Bradley thinks he's going to have one of the best curveballs in baseball. Okay.
Right.
I mean, yeah.
Because you know what's going to happen in the third game of the season when he throws a curveball and gets hit for a three-run home run?
We're gonna play this soundbite.
We're gonna have one of the best curveballs in baseball.
We're gonna play that soundbite. We're gonna remind him that he said that. Yes, we are. The Rundown with Spencer Keatsman is next.
Spencer Keatsman.
We're back tomorrow at 2 o'clock here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Have a good night, everyone.